Welcome to You Can Have What You Want with your host, Michael Neal.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be. Our topic for today is the game of life and living, and my very special guest is Dr. George Pransky. He's the author of a number of books, including The Renaissance of Psychology, The Relationships Handbook, and he's one of the co-founders of a field known as principles-based psychology. And he's also one of the coolest guys I've ever had the privilege of spending time talking to. So, George, welcome to the show.
Very gracious introduction.
Well, it's easy when it's real. Everyone always kind of talks about honesty as a virtue, but for me, it's just purely practical. I can never remember which lie I told, so I'll just
That's right, yeah.
So let me start, George, because a lot of people, I was shocked when I came across your work, and I don't know if you even know the story of how it happened, but I'll share it here. Nina and I have been together for 20 years, and about once a year we have a fight. It's just like an annual event. And this year it was about moving house. It was actually last year now, in 2007. And, she wanted to move house, and I wasn't ready to move house. And it was one of these little things that became a big thing. And a friend of mine who I talked to about it said, well, look, I'm not going to say anything, but read this book. And he gave me a copy of the Relationship Handbook. And I read so many of these things that I just assumed that the fact that I hadn't heard of it must mean that there wasn't anything in it. And I read it, and I loved it. I was fascinated by it. I used to work in the book trade, and I used to joke that there were 10 books, and they just kept getting rewritten. And this was different. And I really, by about chapter two, I was really thinking about things differently. And that was on a Monday. On the Friday, my friend said, so how are things with Nina? And I said, what do you mean? And he said, well, you guys were fighting. And I was like, were we? And I literally, for about 2.5 minutes, could not even remember what we could possibly have been fighting about. And that was my first introduction to your work and the principles-based work. So I guess for the audience, where I'd love to start is maybe just a brief introduction to, given that we call it principles-based psychology, what are the principles?
Oh, okay, well, the three principles that our work is completely based on is mind, consciousness, and thought. And the idea of it is that mind is the origin, the source, the energy behind life. You know, in the body, mind is manifested with as a life force, makes your heart beat and stuff like that. And with regard to our mind, with regard to our mental life, mind is the source of power that enables us to think and be conscious. So the other two principles are thought and consciousness. And the way it works, Michael, is every moment of every day we are formulating thought and bringing that thought to life via the senses. So as we're talking here, people are thinking what we're talking and bringing it to life. So a person can, for example, with regard to pain, a person can be completely oblivious to pain because it's not in their thoughts. Not even feel it. On the other hand, a person could have absolutely nothing wrong with their body, but because of their thoughts, hypochondriac and think they're in tremendous pain because their consciousness brings that to life.
Just one of the things that I found fascinating when I first sort of came across the principles was they seemed too simple.
Yeah.
And yet, I found very quickly that as I talked with my clients about them, I mean, I actually remember the first time I did it, I just literally was sharing my understanding of how we created our experience through mind, consciousness, and thought. And this was a guy from Glasgow. I don't know if you know the comedian Billy Connolly, but imagine I was imagine I was coaching Billy Connolly. And so, not somebody who was at all open in theory to this kind of thing. And, he'd come in, he wanted to talk about, how he could reach a business goal. And he called me a few days later and he said, what the hell did you do to me? And I had to be honest with him and say, look, I don't really know, but... But there's something about, and this is what I've discovered, and this is why I'm so glad to have you on the show, that just when you begin to have that understanding of where your experience is coming from and how it's being created, that changes it without you necessarily having to do anything about it.
Isn't Isn't that amazing? So you're having the exact same experience, but with this understanding of these principles, it doesn't have the same negative impact on you.
Yeah, and I mean, that's something that, one of the things I really learned from you was the value of understanding. Now, I was trained in the psychology I was trained in, which was primarily neuro-linguistic programming. We used to have a saying, understanding is the booby prize, and it was really looked down on. It's like, yeah, it's great if you understand it. Who cares? What's your experience? Has your experience changed?
Yeah.
And so it was a real revelation to me to begin to really see the value of understanding the source of the experience and what that did to the experience. So I'm just wondering if maybe you can just talk a bit about that.
Well, understanding is the single variable that determines people's well-being in life. In other words, whether a person has a happy life or an unhappy life, understanding is going to be the determinant. So people who don't see but understand these principles think that the biggest determinant in life is what are your circumstances? You know, how much money do you have? How good is your wife or your husband? How good is your health? But the fact is, no matter what circumstances a person is under, if they properly understand that their experience is being created within their own mind, that you know, thought is the intermediary between you and life, and it's you're living in your thoughts and how those thoughts are brought to life. As you understand that, people are able to take even their worst experiences in stride, because it's very scary for human beings to feel like they're the victim of circumstances. It makes them very insecure and very fearful. It makes it much safer if they know that nothing can hurt them or bum them out or trouble them except their own thinking.
And I think that is a huge thing. When I do talks, I do a talk called You Were Born Happy. And one of the things that I talk about is that where you attribute your happiness to will tell you everything about where you go to get it when you don't have it. So if you think that you're happy because, you know, you came to see the guru, well, the next time you're feeling unhappy, you're either going to go back to the guru or find a different one. If you think that you're happy because of your, you know, because you have a lot of money, well, the next time you're unhappy, you're going to look to get more money. If you think it's because of, you know, a religious experience or a meditation practice or, you know, a relationship, that's where you're going to go. And for me, one of the big insights that I had in this work was when I suddenly got that if happiness really isn't out there, if it's just, there's just a general state of well-being that we're born with that is sort of innate in us, then suddenly I don't have to do stuff anymore in order to get back to that feeling.
Yeah. And not only that, but if you think about it, Mike, if you think circumstances is the source of your well-being, your learning curve is going to be how to get better circumstances. And you and I both know that it's not all that easy to get circumstances in life the way you want them. On the other hand, if you see your well-being as coming from within yourself, you're going to have a learning curve, and you're going to have learning about how you can, you know, find that happiness, which is already there within you.
So that brings us to the sort of topic of the show. We call the show the Game of Life and Living. So maybe you can sort of set the table. We're gonna go to the phones either later in this segment, beginning of next segment. So if you're on hold, please stay on hold. I will get to you. If you want to get on, the number's to call 866-254-1579. It's toll-free, 866-254-1579. If you want to phone us from outside the United States, 001-760-918-4300. But just before we go to the phones, let's talk a little bit about what is the game of life and how is that different from living?
Well, there's really two aspects of life, and that is, there's what I call the game of life, and that's in the outside world, in the secular world, your achievements, your accomplishment, your job. Everybody has to participate in life. People who don't participate in life, you know, find it doesn't work out very well. So the rules of the game of life, it's like a dog and a stick, is you set a goal and then you go out after that goal. And in the game of life, where you are now isn't where it's at. because it doesn't make for a good game to be where I am now is fine. So you're always looking to for more and to accomplish things. And that's a wonderful thing. And that's why this country has been so successful. People have been ambitious. The other aspect of life, which people are generally have very little expertise in, is living. And living is the ability to enjoy the moment-to-moment in life and the ability to enjoy the game itself. So there's so many people who spend their lives and accomplish all these wonderful things, and they have nothing to show for it in terms of their personal satisfaction. And yet, the game of life, there's huge amounts of expertise, goal setting, and accomplishing things, and people don't know how to close that gap between their accomplishments and the satisfaction that they get from that, those accomplishments.
So can you maybe share an example? Because I know that you do a lot of work with business people, with people who have done very well in the game of life, and sort of how that contrasts to and how they maybe made a transition to getting better at the living bit.
Well, one of the things we do, we specialize in, is we work with families of wealth, you might say. People who have been very, very successful, and the whole family's come out here, and we work with them. And it's very typical that the father has been working like crazy his whole life, and he and his wife have been partnering in this, and they've built this virtual empire. So they have a tremendous affluence. And yet, they begin to realize that their kids, you know, don't appreciate what they've got, that they don't, they have not enjoyed the journey, that they don't enjoy what they have now because they're kind of worn out and concerned about things. And they're asking themselves, why was that worth it? You know? I mean, I worked hard. Why was that worth it? I expected to get something back from this. And they don't realize that what you get back from life has to come from within you. And it comes from these understanding these principles, understanding where your experience is coming from, and learning to see life as a psychological experience rather than, you know, what you do out in the world.
So in working with someone like that, how do they change?
Well, for one thing, Michael, we'll say to them, look, let's say his name is Joe. Look, Joe, you are not going to feel any better and have a nicer feeling about life by doing anything in the world. You're just not going to do it. You should be able to see that by now. The feelings that you want are within you, have always been within you, and but for all the distracting thought you've had, all the things that are on your mind, you'd be feeling good. Like if right now, all of a sudden you cleared your mind and you had nothing on your mind and you relaxed, that innate health that you have would come through and you'd have feelings of satisfaction, enjoyment, gratitude, and you'd feel close to people. And then if you filled your mind with all these other thoughts, it would go away. And people begin to see that their thinking determines their satisfaction, their enjoyment.
Now, but what's really different about your work, and particularly because here at Hay House, a lot of the work has been built around the sort of notion of, you know, change your thoughts, change your life. You don't actually work with people on changing their thoughts.
No, we don't. What we work with them on is understanding the role of thought. Understanding that it's just thought, but for your thinking, you'd be feeling differently. And just as a natural course of things, just the way you talked about earlier, when people see that it's just thought and they don't take it as seriously, their thinking changes for the better because deep down we're wired up for happiness. So even if a person, let's say a person's in the house and they're worrying like crazy about their finances, all right? Mm-hmm. And it's getting at their gut, and it's making them feel really despondent. And they suddenly realize, this is just thought. This isn't my finances. This is thought, okay? even though my finances might be bad, what's hurting me is the thinking. Well, even though they're thinking, even though they might continue to worry, they would see the problem as thought rather than finances. And that does something for people. Like, if you don't like someone, and you know the only reason you don't like them is because of your thinking, you, the door is open for you to think, to see them differently. Whereas if you blame them for the fact that you don't like them, it's not going to change.
Okay, we're going to pick up on this. We're going to come back with your calls. The numbers to call to get in, 866-254-1579. It's toll-free, 866-254-1579. Or from outside the United States, you can reach the show on 001-760-918-4300. We're going to be back with your calls and with Dr. George Pransky and the Game of Life and Living right after this.
Welcome back to You Can Have What You Want with your host, Michael Neal.
We are back. We're talking with Dr. George Pransky, and we're talking with you. So let's begin by talking to Roxandra in Montreal. Roxandra, welcome to the show. What can we do for you today?
Thank you. Well, actually, my question was geared to the relationship, but it feels in the back, in the big picture, because this is what I kind of miss. Like, how do I enjoy every day with my partner or whatever, and not drag the past in or the fears from the past?
George?
Well, yeah. That is a very common problem. I don't know anybody that wouldn't say, to one degree or another, the past interferes with my relationship. Now, there's two answers to that. One thing is, if you know that that's what's happening at the time it's happening, if you understand that, it shouldn't create a problem. In other words, let's say your mate says something and you get all upset, and you know that it's not what they said, it's just a reaction from the past.
Right.
Even if you get upset, and even if you yell and scream or whatever,
yeah,
if you understand that that's all that's happening, and you're able to apologize for it and say, look, it wasn't you, I just, you know, something just seemed, you were acting like my ex, and it just made my mind crazy.
Right.
It will neutralize it, and it won't be a problem. That's one part of it, okay?
Mm-hmm.
The other part of it is, if you have the intent of coming to peace with all the things that happened in your past relationships and mm-hmm. getting back into a good place about it,
mm-hmm.
you'll see that that will start happening. You'll start forgiving and forgetting.
Right.
But the important thing, again, is the intent. It really matters if that's what you're up to. You don't have to work at it. You just have to kind of head yourself in that direction.
Okay, and how do I head myself in that direction? Because, okay, that's a good one. I don't have to work for it, which is good, a good insight. But then how do I head myself in the direction? Is the intention enough?
Well, if you said to yourself and meant it, you know, I want to feel warmly towards my ex, okay? If you could say that and mean it, I guarantee you that it would turn around and you would start feeling more warmly towards him. But you have to have that intent.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have that intent. I want to feel warmly towards my ex. And a lot of people, that sticks in their throat.
Right.
But that's it. That's what you have to do. Like my wife and I, you know, sometimes one of us will slip into a strong reaction about something, and we'll realize that all it is just our reaction to our past. And
right.
As soon as we know it, it neutralizes it.
Because sometimes it's based on the past, I understand that, and I understand my reaction. But it is something, and I understand a lot of my reaction has less to do with the present moment.
Yes.
However, the whatever makes me react, it is in the present, and it comes from a partner who I expect that not to be perfect, but to still think about something before saying something.
Yeah.
You know, and yes, occasionally I realize, I mean, I do realize most of the time that, or even I overreact, but instead of apologizing, sometimes I feel actually guilty afterwards.
You feel
overreacting.
What? Say that again. Instead of apologizing, you feel how?
Yeah, I feel actually guilty, and, you know, I need the time to just cool off, but and sometimes it's just in the moment when it's the button, it's so, that surface, I'm like, boom. And I understand that it's not, you know, I kind of work through a lot and I understand, okay, it doesn't mean this is the end, or it's hard to not look at the, you know, the past relationship or other dynamics or the childhood and figure out, oh, what, and, you know, questioning, oh, is this the right relationship? Because
well,
I realize that I'm not happy, and it doesn't matter whatever partner, I'm in a good place. I can't complain. It's just that I don't feel happy enough. I don't know.
Well, everybody has those reactions, and it doesn't matter how long it takes to get over it and apologize. It doesn't matter. As long as you do get over it and apologize, it takes you back where you were before it happens.
Okay.
And then in the long term, as I say, you've got to make a commitment to feel fondly and forgiving of your past mate and of the people in your life that you still bear resentment towards. As long as you have that commitment, you'll see it getting better and better and better.
My only problem is that although I have done some of that, I it's harder for me to forgive myself.
I know. You have to do that, too.
And that's I did quite a bit of that, you know, to with my ex. It's always one issue because he's the father of my son, so it's still always something to react, but I try to do my best. My father died and whatever, but it's harder for me to forgive myself.
So, Roxandra, can I jump in?
Sure.
So, I just as a way of just sort of giving you something to go away and play with, what occurs to me might be kind of interesting.
Right.
Is just over this next week, just as you're going about doing what you do, you don't have to do anything special.
Right.
Just notice, if you do notice yourself sort of suddenly getting very emotionally worked up, either against yourself or against your ex or against your current partner.
Right.
Just notice it. And then when you can, stop for a moment and just look at what was the thought that was there just before I got all caught up.
Okay.
Because what you'll find is there always is one. And it might be, I can't believe he's done that again, or I can't believe I've let myself fall for this again. And it's such an interesting thing. But when you start to see that, you'll see that it really is, the emotion is always coming from the reaction to the thought.
Yes.
And that, just seeing that changes the game. Would you be up for just playing with that this week?
Sure.
All right. Thank you very much for phoning in, Roxandra.
Thank you very much.
We are going to go to Mary in Los Angeles. Mary, welcome to the show. What can we do for you today? Mary, you with us? Mary going once.
Hello?
Hey, Mary.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Thank you for taking my call. I would like some advice how to succeed on my real estate business, please.
Okay, so actually, this is great, George. I'm really glad that she's come on with that because what you're talking about could sound sort of a little bit abstract and a little bit of, well, it's just a way of thinking.
Yeah.
So how can you apply it to somebody who wants something very practical that's part of maybe the game of life?
Mm-hmm. Well, is it Mary?
Yes.
Mary, I can give you an example, actually, that's like 2 weeks old. I work for a, I consult with a billboard company, you know, the outdoor advertising billboards?
Yes.
And right now, of course, the first thing people cut is advertising. So they're working in a really bad market, business conditions. And what happens to people when circumstances are like that is they get discouraged. And when they get discouraged, they make less calls and they have a lower percent of success because you know, desperation doesn't sell well in the marketplace.
Yeah.
Now, the thing that they have to realize, and I help them to realize, is you have to change your state of mind before your business is going to improve, and that they run independently. In other words, there are some people in this market who are very, very discouraged, and other people who are actually optimistic.
Yeah.
Because they know that there are people going to be buying houses, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
And there's always people buying houses, and all they have to do is get their share of that, and they're going to do well. But it's a state of mind issue. In other words, people think that if market conditions are bad, it's understandable that you'd be discouraged. And it is understandable, but it's not necessary. You have to take responsibility for your discouragement and for your pessimism and see that it's your own thinking that's doing that.
Yeah.
And that has to change in order for you to become successful.
Okay.
And the other thing you have to realize is that the people that you're talking to are affected by your level of optimism. So if you think, gee, this is a bad time to buy houses, or if you think, gee, it's really hard for people to come up with money these days, it's hard to, if you think that, the people that talk to you are going to pick up on it.
Yeah.
But in actual fact, any given person could buy a house if they wanted to. Maybe it'd be more difficult, but there are houses being sold and houses being bought.
Yes, yes, they are.
Does that make sense?
Yes, he does. Thank you.
Mary, if I'll just thank you for phoning in. I want to just add something to that mix, George. I don't know if you know the who moved my cheese story, but I always just think it's very relevant in this kind of thing where, you know, the idea being that if you put rats in a maze and you put cheese at one end of the maze, the rats will figure out eventually how to get to the cheese. And then from that point on, every time they get in the maze, they'll follow the same path, they'll get to the cheese. If you move the cheese after a month or a year, well, they'll go ahead and they'll go to where the cheese was once or twice, but then they'll start sniffing it out until they find where the cheese is now. And the difference between a rat and a human being is that if you put the human being in the maze, he'll go down to where the cheese used to be, and he'll sit there for the rest of his life going, "Who moved my cheese?"
That's true.
And you know, that is the wonderful thing that I found in coaching the people that I coach is it's fascinating how some of them totally see that what's going on in the economy just means they need to actually change their approach a little bit to adapt to what's currently going on around them. Whereas others are sitting there kind of moaning about the fact that it's gone away and when will it come back?
Mm-hmm.
And it really is about that mental clarity of being able to see through the idea that, oh my God, it's supposed to always be the same on the outside.
And you know, Mike, what they have to do differently is a state of mind. That's the only thing that hurts the sales of people, in a bad economy is discouragement. They get discouraged and they buy into the fears and they buy into the concerns. And pretty soon, it really hurts their attempts.
And I absolutely, and I find that continually is that it's almost like I don't even know where this term originally comes from. I think of it as being from the Austin Powers movies, but you know, it's like they've lost their mojo.
Yeah.
And you know, once they get clear in their thinking and they get their mojo back, you know, they just find ways of working within the environment that they're in.
Any person that can separate circumstance from state of mind, circumstance from internal quality of life, and see them as separate, is going to do well. Because they're going to attend to their state of mind rather than attending to their circumstances.
Yeah, and I think that's so powerful. I want to take a call. There's a call here that I think speaks to this. Let's go to Zan in British Columbia. Zan, welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Well, I was wondering, if you don't believe in positive affirmations, how do you suggest that you release the physical pain from negative thoughts?
Say that one more time, Jan, okay?
If you don't agree with saying positive affirmations, how do you suggest that you release the physical pain that one gets from, I get physical pain when I have a negative thought. It automatically goes to usually my gut, my jaw, or my neck.
I see what you're asking. See, what Mike was saying earlier and what I was attempting to say as well is people are wired up to have healthy thinking. Like if you look at, you know, 1-year-olds and 1-month-olds and 3-month-olds, they think very responsively. They get over things fast. We are wired up to think healthy. We don't have to make it happen to think healthy. We do have to make it happen to think unhealthy.
Mm-hmm.
We have to overcome our natural instincts. So if a person simply clears their mind, it will be, their thinking will come up healthy. They don't have to actively think healthy thoughts. It happens automatically.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have a lot more healthy thoughts than I do the negative thoughts, but the negative thoughts just kind of stick in the body there and take a while for the energy to leave.
Yeah. Well, the quicker you see them as thought, the quicker they'll leave you.
Mm-hmm.
Because they just don't, as soon as they're seen as thought, they don't have the relevance.
Yeah.
And it's the thought recognition that releases people from their negative thinking. And as soon as the negative thinking goes, it's automatically replaced.
Yeah, just not to give them any power.
That's right.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, then. We're coming up on another break. If you want to get in the last segment with your questions for George, the number's to call 866-254-1579. It's toll-free, 866-254-1579. If you want to learn more, go online to www.pranskyandassociates.com. We're going to be right back after this.
1, 2, 3, hit it! Welcome back to You Can Have What You Want with your host, Michael Neal.
We are back. We're talking with Dr. George Pransky, author of The Relationship Handbook and one of the co-founders of Principles-Based Psychology. And we're talking to you. Let's go to Lori in Washington. Lori, welcome to the show. What can we do for you today?
Hello.
Hello.
I have fibromyalgia, and I am a dance instructor. And first I wanted to mention just something you said earlier. In my dance classes, I find most of the students are fine. We get into a position and then rotate and practice getting there. And I always have this one gentleman that's always like, well, how do we get out of it? And I'm like, Jane, can't you just enjoy the journey of getting there? You know, because we have a whole hour to finish it off. So I don't know if there's a better way to handle his need to get to the end of everything so quickly.
I didn't quite. Mike, can you tell me what Jen said? I didn't quite get the last part of it.
Well, so Laura, if I understand you, there's two things. One is that you've got fibromyalgia,
right? And unrelated to the dance.
And how that's related to the dance. And I'm going to assume also, you know, how that's related to, you know, because we were just talking about, you know, the relationship between thought and pain in the body and things like that.
Uh-huh.
And then the other thing was about a specific gentleman in one of her dance classes who immediately goes to, before as they're getting into a process thing, well, how do we get out of it?
Right. He wants to get to the end of the sentence before we're halfway through.
Yeah.
And kind of how do you work, you know, work with that? I mean, it's just like he's not enjoying the moment.
Yeah.
He wants to get to the...
Yeah, he's trying to win the game of life and isn't enjoying the living.
Right. And it's like, and I've known him for years, and it's like, I feel kind of like bad that he's always in such a hurry.
Mm.
So is there any suggestion of how to say or approach him that he might get more enjoyment out of it?
Well, let's take the second part first, because that's the easiest one. It's people, unless you have a lot of permission, people are not very receptive to you trying to help them out, even if you're coming from a good place and you're right in what you're saying. Mostly, the way we affect each other is through role models.
Okay.
You know, like if you have a smile on your face and seem to be enjoying what you're doing, at some point he's going to say to you, how do you do that, you know?
Right.
But let's take the first one, Laura. You know, in my mind, there's a lot of confusion about the relationship between the body and the mind and thought and physical conditions. And to the best of my knowledge, the physical body and the power, the life circumstances and all, has kind of a logic of its own. Mm-hmm. In other words, if you eat a certain way, and if you mistreat your body, and if you have genetic things going, or if you expose yourself to bad circumstances, you're going to get X amount of specific illnesses, and doctors are pretty good at figuring out that relationship. So I don't see that as having to do with you and me in our thinking. What I do see as having to do with you and me in our thinking and health is low spirits have an effect on people's body chemistry and on their immune systems.
Correct.
So if your spirits are low, your immune system, there won't be as many immune cells, and your immune system isn't quite as strong. And also, people's body chemistry is affected. Like, just if a person is depressed, they don't breathe as deeply.
That's true.
And if you don't breathe as deeply, it affects your chemistry.
I catch myself breathing very shallow a lot.
Yeah, me too. Me too, when I get, you know, upset. And what we found in working with, clients with depression or clients with manic depressive disorders is they can be on medication. When we work with them and they respond and start to grasp these principles, their chemistry improves. And the reason we know that is because they start getting side effects and their psychiatrist tells them to take less of a dose.
Uh-huh.
So people's chemistry is absolutely affected by the quality of thinking that they do and by their level of understanding.
Okay. Is one of your books you recommend more so for my issue?
I don't have one that I would recommend, to be honest with you. I don't.
I love this about George, by the way. He's the only author that I ever talk to who doesn't always recommend his own books.
I don't know whether my books would help you with that, and I don't know of other ones.
I do a lot of meditation and that sort of thing, but I didn't know if maybe there's something that's just not clicking
in my mind. I think Second Chance, George.
Oh, that's a great idea, yes. That's it. Second Chance and a book called The Missing Link.
And they're both by a guy named Syd Banks, S-Y-D, Banks, B-A-N-K-S.
Second Chance. And what was the other one?
The Missing Link.
Good.
And they're both really nice. One's a Second Chance is a story about a healing. And Missing Link is sort of more about the principles behind it.
And what that'll do for you, Lori, is it will affect your spirits. Those two books will absolutely affect your spirits.
Okay.
And when they affect your spirits, your whole physiology gets stronger because your immune system gets stronger and your chemistry gets stronger.
Thank you.
And whatever ails you, that'll help you.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Lori.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. We're going to go back to the phones in just a minute. I just want to say, George, that to me is, we were talking in the break, and that's such a huge thing. Is for people to get that. Yeah, of course, there is a link between your state of mind and your physical health, but it isn't a causal link.
No, it's not a one-to-one causal. And the physical body has a logic of its own. In other words, it has to do with it. There have been a lot of very, very high-spirited, mentally healthy people who have died at very young ages, and a lot of people who had really bad mental health and lived a long life.
So these are things that make a difference, not the things that will determine whether it happens or not. Let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Kathy in Georgia. Kathy, welcome to the show. Thank you for holding. What can we do for you today?
With over 100 offices.
Okay. Kathy, are you there? Okay. We seem to have gotten the Tesco's hotline. Okay. We'll give Kathy another chance a little bit later. Let's go to Francie in Slovenia. Francie, welcome to the show. What can we do for you today?
Yes, my name is Francie from Slovenia. I'm a writer too, and I'm listening to your radio show. And I just want to say, it's amazing what can you do with thinking and with the power of imagination. And I believe in inner self that everything is possible if your decision is so well, is so powerful that everything can be possible. I can say by this because I was being very young homeless, and now I became a very successful writer in Europe. So if your determination is very clear, everything is possible. This is
it's
my thought.
It's true, isn't it?
This is my thought to this lady that it's everything. Of course, you can have you can't have no 65 days happy days. This is only maybe only Jesus, maybe only or also other people can. That we are only a human, and sometimes we are depressed. Sometimes we are losing mind, or how say, stops dreaming, and then it stops. But if you decide to go up each every day, you are growing up, and this is the most important thinking in each every human. And in this crisis, in financial crisis, you have to believe that tomorrow will be a better day.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm calling to your radio show, because, look, I approach to this all phone lines like a law of attraction. And I can tell you that it's everything it's possible, that the life is very beautiful, even if you are not rich or living in the street. But you have to just have one point of your life to live, to love, to live.
Well, you know what I like in what you said that's a really helpful to people is it's the objective is not to be happy all the time, because that's just not realistic. Everybody
yes.
has low moods. But it is realistic for someone to be resilient and to recover and get their well-being back, even as their external circumstances are very daunting.
Yeah, and the thing that I think is great there, Francie, and thank you very much for phoning in. But the thing that I think is great about that is the whole thing about hope. You know, you talked earlier, George. You talked about you know, discouragement
yeah.
as being, you know, the enemy of sales, and you know, we could talk about it as it works against health and it works against all these different things. But you know, the flip of that is that there's something so wonderful about hope that it's this incredible healing energy. And I don't know if you have thoughts on that even, but
hope is one of the most wonderful change agents and health agents. It's just a natural, mental health agent. The instant, if someone's in line and they're in traffic and the traffic is as far as the eye can see, and one car starts moving way up there, instantly people get hope, and it changes everything. It's just amazing how much hope can bring people past however much negativity they have. A little bit of hope is a very powerful thing.
Yeah, and I find that sort of a fascinating thing in exploring the kind of work that you guys do is you take things that that people just go, well, I'm just going to have to live with that. You know, that's just something that I'm going to have to put up with. And there's a certain peace that comes with that
mm-hmm.
because you're no longer spending all your energy trying to, you know, throw the stick and make there better than here. But at the same time, when you suddenly can tap back into that hope, into that sense of possibility around it, there is suddenly new ideas, new insights come in. And I thought we're coming to the end of the show, and I just we've got a couple minutes. I was just wondering if we could maybe finish by just talking a little bit about the role of insight in really finding that joy in living.
Well, I think that people's minds, as the last caller said, have an infinite intelligence behind them. And when people's minds are free and available, they are almost wired up to have insights to whatever problems or conditions they're concerned with. It's just natural. That's why when people go on vacation, they usually get better ideas about their work during those 2 weeks when they're not even thinking about work than they do during the 50 weeks when they're thinking about it. Because the human mind has this, you know, infinite energy behind it, infinite intelligence, and it's just waiting for people to free their minds enough for that intelligence to come through.
And I find that, you know, it's different with different people, but, you know, very often somebody's really wrestling with somebody, I'll just take the day off from it.
Really?
You know, just leave.
Or take a walk, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Or go to the water cooler and have a drink. Anything that'll clear your head, take a shower, you know?
Yeah, and I sort of remember, I think it was you who was telling a story about you were introducing that idea of how insight could come, you know, just by taking a shower, and you had an executive ask you how long they needed to shower to get the insight.
Yeah, that's right.
Which I just think is quite wonderful, you know, and sort of shows how far you can get caught up in the game of life part of it.
Listen, yeah.
I want to thank you so much for joining me on the show today. If you enjoyed listening to George and the kinds of ideas that we were talking about on the show today, you can learn more at www.pranskyandassociates.com. And George's book is The Relationship Handbook. Also, George, you said you've got a new book that you're working on. Do you have a title?
Yeah, I am. I just finished up the first draft, and I don't think it's going to be long before that book comes out. I don't have a good working title yet, but
all right. Well, you and I—that's going to be our next project. I'm going to work with you on that, George. Listen,
thank you,
Mitch, Rocky, and Steve in the studio for keeping us on air. Thank you for listening. We will be back with a brand new show next week. Until then, have fun, learn heaps, and I'll speak to you then. Bye bye for now.